wanted the best, you've got the best podcast. The hottest podcast in the world. The Chris Voss Show, the preeminent podcast with guests so smart you may experience serious brain bleed. The CEOs, authors, thought leaders, visionaries, and motivators. Get ready. Strap yourself in. Keep your hands, arms, and legs inside the vehicle at all times, because you're about to go on a monster education roller coaster with your brain. Now, here's your host, Chris Voss.
Hi, folks. This is Voss here from thechrisvossshow.com. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. The Iron Lady sings it. That makes it official. I'm so glad I don't have to do it after 14 years and we just let her handle the business. As always, we have the most amazing authors, minds, Pulitzer Prize winners, New York Times bestsellers, billionaires, CEOs, White House presidents, advisors, all the brilliant people are on the show today. And we're going to be talking about something that I was a fan of when I was growing up, watching Pete Rose. I don't know if I can claim that anybody loved the game more than him, but certainly he played it like he did. Maybe that's the right way to say it. We'll find out from our amazing author we have on. His newest book has just come out. It's Charlie Hustle, The Rise and Fall of Pete Rose and the Last Glory Days of Baseball. And actually, March 26, 2024, here in a few more days, it'll be out. Keith O'Brien joins us on the show today. We'll be talking to him about his amazing book. He is a New York Times best-selling author of Paradise Falls, Fly Girls, and Outside Shot, a finalist for the Penn ESPN Award for Literary Sports Writing, an award-winning journalist. He's written for the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Politico, and his stories have also appeared in National Public Radio and This American Life. And he lives in New Hampshire. That's the peak of his whole bio right there. He lives in New Hampshire. So there you go. Welcome to the show, Keith. How are you?
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. Really appreciate it. Honored to have you. Give us your .coms. Where do you want people to find you on the interwebs?
Sure. My website is real simple. It's just keithob.com. You can follow me on Twitter by that same handle, keithob, or on Instagram at O'Brien's Story.
There you go. Tell us about this unknown Pete Rose guy no one has ever heard of, and give us a 30,000 overview of your book.
Sure. So, of course, I think most people of a certain age will have heard about Pete Rose. He's one of our great baseball legends. And also, I think, just objectively, one of the most fascinating, complex, and controversial athletes of the past 100 years. Pete Rose, you know, climbs to the top of the baseball mountain. You know, he is the all-time baseball hit king, the hit leader still of 40 years after he stopped playing. But Pete Rose loses it all in an epic gambling scandal in 1989 and is banished from the game for betting on baseball and betting on his own team, the Cincinnati Reds. And, you know, I wanted to go back and tell that story for a couple reasons, Chris. You know, for one thing, what I was really trying to capture here was the human story. Yes, Pete Rose is a baseball player, but for me, it's almost immaterial. You know, what's most interesting to me about his story is this rise and this fall. It is really, I think, a Greek tragedy that just happened to play out on an American baseball field. And the other reason why I wanted to explore it again now, Chris, is in the past 6 years, we have seen a cultural shift in America that no one expected. Gambling, and sports gambling in particular, is now legal in most states. Last year in America, we legally wagered $120 billion on sports, just legally. And while, you know, that change doesn't mean that nowadays a player like Pete Rose could bet on his own team to win. It doesn't. That's still disallowed by Major League Baseball for all the obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. It does raise some pretty interesting questions. And so I thought, what better time to go back and explore one of our most notorious gamblers than now?
There you go. And, you know, Pete Rose, I was still watching baseball back then as a kid. I was a big Dodgers fan, but I love the Oakland A's, and I can't remember the gentleman on the Oakland A's that I used to love. What, Reggie Jackson?
Sure, Reggie Jackson, the 70s, absolutely.
I was a big fan of Tommy Lasorda, of course, was just so fun to watch with the Dodgers. But I grew up a Dodgers fan, and he's recently run for Senate.
Steve Garvey.
Steve Garvey. I was a huge Steve Garvey. I love Steve Garvey. And then, but Pete Rose, you tuned in to watch Pete Rose. You wanted to see that slide that he would always do in the base. I mean, he was just, and he was such a hustler too around the bases, but you just got to say, it was like watching Michael Jordan with that tongue hanging out of his mouth as he's flying through the air and defying gravity. And it just captured a love of the game that, you know, there's a lot of great players out there, but there's something that goes like next level with certain players. And I think Pete Rose was that. And I think a lot of people felt that.
You're absolutely right. I mean, people gravitated to him for all the reasons why you mentioned. You know, he really was, quite frankly, an ordinary athlete. You know, I write in my book, Charlie Hustle, that he was, I think, arguably our most ordinary, extraordinary athlete. He came from a working class neighborhood on the west side of Cincinnati. He was never the best player on his youth baseball teams all the way through high school. He was small. He had no obvious talents. So there's no reason why this man, you know, should have, you know, made the major leagues, much less, you know, become baseball's all-time hit leader. And he knew this, you know, from a young age, Pete did. And, you know, he knew that to make it, that frankly, just to survive, that he had to play harder than the next guy. And, you know, there he was, you know, sprinting down to first base on a walk. There he was, you know, barreling into second base in meaningless games to break up double plays. There he was sliding head first into bases. This was, you know, part of his persona. Yeah. And he wore that persona, you know, in every part of his life, for good or for ill.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, you just see it in the way he played. I mean, there's I can't think of the Ravens running back that I used to love to watch. And normally because he was fast as hell, and then the other time is if he hit somebody, he'd knock the teeth out of him. So I love that. I'm a Raiders fan, so I'm used to I like concussions and knocking people's teeth out. But you could just tell the way he played the game. I mean, even though you weren't a Cincinnati fans thing, you're like, what? Oh, Pete Rose is on? Yeah, we're watching that game. You know, it's the same reason you turn into NASCAR to watch the cars crash or something.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, but that's that same persona that I mentioned before, and that thing that you loved and that fans loved. Mm-hmm. It propelled him to all this success onto the field and made him a star on the field. But I think, you know, my research and reporting shows that same persona, that same unwillingness to bend, that same belief that he will prevail. Pete was the eternal optimist, and that same unwillingness to be vulnerable, to be weak, you know, hurts him off the field so that when he begins to propel into gambling and into gambling addiction, again, I believe my research shows, he can't reckon with it. He can't be honest about it. And that inability to do so is ultimately what will doom him to failure.
There you go. Ray Lewis was referencing earlier for the Ravens for that. So we're going to circle back to the book, but let's get to know you a little bit better. Tell us about your upbringing. What made you want to become a writer? You've written multiple books. What made you want to write about sports, and what brought you to this story?
You know, I've probably wanted to write and gravitated to write from, you know, the time I was, you know, in middle school. And I certainly knew by college that it was something that interested me. You know, this story is something that's sort of imbued on me. You know, I was born also in Cincinnati and raised in Cincinnati. Mm. You know, I was too young to remember the big red machine teams that were so dominant in the 1970s, the ones that Pete Rose played for and won World Series titles with. But I'm in the wheelhouse for my love of baseball when Pete returns to Cincinnati from the Montreal Expos in 1984. I remember, as many Americans do who were alive at that time, exactly where I was on the night that he set the all-time hit record. Yeah. And I remember that tumultuous year in 1989, you know, when he got himself embroiled in what was, until that point, you know, one of the most epic gambling scandals in American sports history. And, you know, if if you were alive during that time, you know that Pete Rose was almost, sort of the backdrop of your life and in the way that many big stars are for us. And that was certainly true of anyone in Cincinnati. And, you know, that was one reason why I was drawn to this story. You know, I know the neighborhood that Pete grew up in. I know guys like him. I went to school with guys like him, and I wanted to explore, you know, this narrative of this man who was bedeviled by his own flaws.
There you go. And I was just thinking to myself, he was on the Wheaties box, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It used to be like all the top people were on the Wheaties box, and some of them aren't men anymore, but one of them isn't. But you know, he was on the Wheaties box, and when you were a kid, you'd see that Wheaties box and you know, hey, I want to be like Pete Rose, I'm gonna eat some Wheaties. You know, it was a thing back then. You know, it was, I don't know why they don't, maybe they still do that on Wheaties boxes. I don't know. I don't eat Wheaties anymore. Probably for obvious reasons. I don't know.
They do still do it, but do you know that, you know, again, that thing that represented so much about our culture in the 1970s and 80s is now just one of a thousand things that represents something about our culture. You know, today, you know, it would be far more important for an athlete to have a viral a tweet or, you know, a popular reel on Instagram than it would be to appear on the Wheaties box. But Pete did, of course, in 1985. He was on that Wheaties box, as were every other iconic athlete in those days.
Yeah. And if you weren't a home brand name, a home recognized name, you know, back, this is before, you know, big media where, you know, everyone's on social media. And that's how you became a home, you know, everyone knew who you were. You're on the front of the Wheaties box. It was kind of a thing back then. There's a lot of books on Pete Rose. What do you feel sets your book apart, et cetera, et cetera?
You know, for Charlie Hustle, there are several things that sets it apart. Mm-hmm. Number one, you know, Pete Rose has never spoken to an author for a book over which he did not have editorial control, which he did not for this one. Oh, wow. And Pete did grant me 27 hours of interviews. Wow. Before he stopped calling me back, before he shut down. I also interviewed for this book many people who have never spoken before. Wow. Three different men who placed his bets on baseball, you know, granted interviews to me for this book, as did dozens and dozens of other people. And, you know, what I really wanted to do was sort of capture the full scope of the Rose story and do it in a personal, intimate way. And you know, I think for all of those reasons, this book is different. Mm-hmm. And every time my reporting sort of cracked open the door to a room, let's say, that we had never seen before, you know, I liked to linger in that room. And so there are scenes, stories, moments, important ones that would ultimately shape this man that, you know, are in this book for the first time.
And those are the stories you love, the things that shape a person, you know, that make them who they are, that make them three-dimensional. Because a lot of times we make our heroes two-dimensional, and they're, you know, not everyone's a complex being, and we all have dichotomies and conflicts, and none of us are perfect beings. I think we know what happened to the last perfect being. And so, I mean, being able to tell these stories behind, and, you know, the things, as you mentioned, making him a personal great, also those flaws are exposed, and sometimes that's how it goes. You break down, you get into some of the FBI and court records, investigative reports on him and everything else. I guess you play out in the book this weirdness of how is it fair, or how do you sell that it's that he should be in the Hall of Fame, that he should be overturned, or how do you approach that?
Yeah, I want to make clear, you know, that one thing that makes this book different from most that have come before is I'm not here to take sides. I'm not here to make an argument for Pete Rose or against Pete Rose. This isn't about his Hall of Fame status. That's not why I wrote it. You know, Pete's not on the ballot at the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. He's not going to be on the ballot at the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown anytime soon, maybe ever. It's a hypothetical built on a mountain of hypotheticals. Yeah. And in fact, the whole question about his Hall of Fame status is really just sort of addressed in effectively the final act of the book. You know, the book doesn't take sides on that. And that was intentional, because one thing I learned early on as a journalist is, you know, don't tell people how to feel. Mm-hmm. Don't tell people, you know what happened. Show them what happened. And then people can figure out on their own how to feel. And you know, that's what I hope this book will do is, you know, give folks a prism to look at Pete Rose through historical interviews with people who were there, interviews with Pete Rose himself, documents, federal court documents, and voluminous investigative documents. And then they can make up their own minds about what they think about Pete Rose.
Do you feel that Pete Rose now, in your discussions with him, 27 hours, that's pretty awesome. Do you feel he recognizes some of the fallacies and shortcomings of his personality at the time? You know, fame is a hard thing to ride. And of course, your desire for it. And of course, addiction is addiction. It's a tough road if you have addictive personality. Has he come to Jesus with it? Does he recognize it? How does he feel these days?
Yeah, that's a big sweeping question. You know, Pete, you know, sometimes, like a lot of famous people in particular, doesn't always have the best 30,000 foot view of himself. You know, he believes that he apologized for his mistakes 20 years ago. He believes that the world should have moved on 20 years ago. And you know, he's right about that. In a certain way, he did write a book in 2004 in which he finally, after 15 years of lying, he came clean to a point and admitted that he had bet on baseball and he had bet on the Reds. But, you know, that memoir is a very shallow, you know, superficial version of the truth, in my opinion, you know. And so my goal as I sat with Pete at times was to get him to talk about the darkness. Because again, you know, if you're going to place bets on baseball and bets on your own team, which are decisions that Pete Rose and any other ball player would have known could get him banned for life, then you have got a problem.
Yeah.
And you know, Pete's way of addressing it, you know, is to say, I didn't think I would get caught. And
I think that's everyone's thing that's in jail right now. And
right. And there's the hubris that's involved. And by the way, you know, hubris is often at the core of many historical mistakes, both by humans and nations and government. It is often the biggest flaw one can have. So his hubris makes him believe that he's not going to get caught. Of course he does. And, you know, this is a critical moment. It's February 1989. He's the player manager now of the Cincinnati Reds. He's no longer a player. He's no longer a player. He's just the manager of the Cincinnati Reds in 1989. And, you know, he's called to New York by the outgoing commissioner, Peter Ueberroth, the incoming commissioner and current National League president, Bart Giamatti, and Giamatti's deputy and close friend, Faye Vincent. And these men have a meeting with Pete Rose in a boardroom next to Ueberroth's office. Mm-hmm. And the whole purpose of the meeting is just to ask Rose a simple question, which is, Major League Baseball has heard at this time that he is betting on baseball, and they want to know if it's true. And Pete lies that day. Wow. And, you know, this is not part of the book, but it does help, I think, offer perspective. You know, the two biggest challenges to any gambling addict getting help are documented in peer review research. The first one is shame.
Yeah.
Shame is the first one. Mm-hmm. And second is indebtedness, being in debt. Mm-hmm. And you know, I believe that Pete had both of those things. I know that Pete was in debt in 1989 and had been to bookies for many, many years. Wow. You know, the fact that he can't be honest there, we can say is a character flaw, and it certainly is, and it will cost him. But I think it's also the sign of an addict. Mm-hmm. And later, this comes up again, because 2 months later, Major League Baseball has now conducted its own investigation with a former Justice Department prosecutor leading the way, a man who has put congressmen and mobsters under indictments. This man, John Dowd, would say that the Pete Rose case was the easiest one he ever prosecuted. And in 8 weeks, he unravels years and years of lies. Wow. And he goes to a second meeting with Pete Rose, this time a legal deposition. Mm-hmm. And Bart Giamatti, who's now the commissioner of baseball, instructs John Dowd that he's not to play gotcha with Pete. He's not to surprise him with anything. Bart Giamatti instructs John Dowd to show him everything. Mm-hmm. Show him the preponderance of the evidence they have gathered. And the hope, and maybe even the belief, was that Pete Rose would see, oh my God, they've got everything. They've got bank records and phone records and my bookie and my former runner statements, you know, implicating me in gambling on baseball. Maybe he should have at that point come clean and told the truth. He still can't do it.
Wow.
He still can't do it. And it will be then 15 more years before he can.
Yeah. Do you think, do you think the penalty might have been less? Do you delve into that if he'd just admitted to it? You know, maybe they could have gotten him help, or I don't know. I don't know if that was even an option. Or,
you know, in the mid-1980s, around 1983, 84, there was a different scandal in baseball, smaller, but a scandalous nonetheless, and it involved cocaine. Several players, prominent ones, including former MVPs, had been supplied with cocaine by a dealer in Pittsburgh. And the players themselves were not on trial for anything, but the dealer was, and they were summoned to testify in court. And so it's really bad for baseball. It's often referred to as the Pittsburgh, you know, cocaine trials.
Wow.
And you know, so the commissioner at the time is Peter Ueberroth, who will still be there 5 years later, you know, in the room with Giamatti and Vincent and Rose. And you know, Ueberroth has to figure out, how do I handle this? How do I punish or not punish these guys who are now testifying in court that they have been supplied with cocaine, in some cases, you know, for years?
Wow.
And Roth ultimately decides that no one's going to be suspended. No one's going to be banned for life. You know, they've paid a price publicly with the trial. And instead of suspensions and banishments, each of them are asked to give a portion of their salary to drug treatment programs, and they move on.
Wow.
And I do believe, and this isn't just my belief, my research and reporting shows that if Pete Rose comes to that meeting in February 1989 and is honest with Ueberroth and Giamatti and Vincent, it is different.
Wow.
Now, does that mean he wouldn't have faced any kind of punishment? No, I don't think so. He still would have been punished in some way. But one thing we have forgotten in the last 35 years, especially as Pete Rose has become a caricature of himself, mm-hmm. is that this was bad for baseball in 1989. Yeah. This wasn't a good thing. Pete Rose was one of our iconic heroes. Mm-hmm. And so for that reason alone, baseball would have done everything it could to save Pete Rose. And by the way, Chris, we find ourselves in that very situation perhaps right now.
Yeah.
I mean, just yesterday, late yesterday, the Los Angeles Dodgers fired the longtime interpreter of Shohei Ohtani, who is not just Major League Baseball's highest paid player, he is the world's most famous baseball player.
Wow.
And the Dodgers fired his interpreter because it has been learned that Shohei Ohtani and the interpreter are connected in some way to a bookmaker, a bookie, and a legal bookie in Southern California. And specifically, just yesterday, Shohei Ohtani's lawyers released a statement saying that accusing his interpreter of massive theft of money in order to pay off, allegedly, pay off this bookie. And, you know, here we are again. You know, the world has changed. Gambling is legal. It's everywhere. Yeah. And yet illegal bookies still operate in the shadows. And 35 years after Pete Rose, you know, was banned for his sins, we have yet another gambling scandal. And just like the Rose scandal in 1989, no matter what Ohtani did or didn't know, this is also bad for baseball.
There you go. I mean, yeah, you have all these. I mean, I was really surprised. You know, the NFL was so resistant to bring a team to, like, the Raiders to Vegas because of the gambling thing. And you're just like, there's still a lot of gambling going on. I don't really think we're the problem. But, you know, the DraftKings and FanDuel and all these things, I mean, just the embrace of it has just been kind of insane. And I've lived in Vegas now for 20, 25 years, and here we have a lot of gamblers. It's reported it's like 15% of people that have gambling addictions or addictions problems here. I think it's more like 30, maybe 25. It might be worse now with all the legalization of it. But I've known a lot of those people that have addiction problems. I've known people that have alcohol addiction problems too that drove them to their death. But the thing with gambling is it doesn't kill you. It you know, like heroin or, you know, cocaine or whatever your drug is that you're doing, or alcohol, you'll live for a long time and you'll do all the wrong things. And there is shame to it, and there is denial. And I've had friends that I can't be friends with anymore, but they struggle. And so I kind of understand Pete Rose's mentality with the, you know, battling with addiction. You know, maybe in a woke sort of society that we're in now, where we're all like, we should forgive people for their trauma and their, you know, their issues. I mean, it seems like he was, you know, at the time, okay, you know, drop the ban hammer. But, you know, there's a point now, I think, where you can say he suffered enough. We understand mental health and addiction maybe a little bit more. Online gambling is here. You know, let's let the guy in the Hall of Fame. I mean, at least put him on the dealio. Let's not give him a lifetime ban. And the other thing I wanted to get to is, I think you're right. You know, you put in the last glory days of baseball. His banning and closure out of the game was one of the things that drove me from baseball. It was probably one of the last straws, other than, I think, the strike was the last straw. Whatever that strike was back then that drove
1994, a lot of people
away. Yeah. And not seeing him, you know, playing the game, being involved, it killed a hero, basically, what it did. Whether it's appropriate or not, you know, as you talk about in your book, it still killed a hero. And it took away the glory of the game, the love of the game. You know, everyone looked up to him, and I think it painted itself onto baseball without maybe them not realizing that. It tarnished baseball's image, and maybe not hitting him so harshly would have tarnished it less. I don't know, but it affected my watching of the game.
You know, Pete's choices that he made in that moment in 1989 certainly affected the punishment he received. But I will agree with you on this. You know, for me, it's not just that Pete is a fault line in baseball. I think he's a fault line in American sports. 1989, his banishment in August 1989, I believe, is a fault line in American sports. It sort of divides the era of heroes from the era of the cheaters. Yeah. I think everything that comes after that, we're always asking, you know, is it real? Is it true? You know, what are they taking? What are they using? And you know, I think there's some irony that in the summer of 1989, when Pete Rose was being investigated for gambling on the game, which was the right choice to make, you know, players are already injecting themselves with steroids.
Yeah.
And there's no investigation happening whatsoever. Oh, wow. And you know, that wave of players that is coming, you know, taking steroids and then other even more efficient performance enhancing drugs will completely destroy the statistics and the records that meant so much to baseball and meant so much to history. It will make a mockery of many of those numbers. And I think you can draw a straight line from all of that, Chris, to the rule changes that Major League Baseball just made last year in order to bring more movement back into the game, in order to bring more base hits back into the game, in order to stop players from trying to swing for a home run every time, because when they fail, they're striking out, and that's boring. You know, for all of those reasons, I do think, you know, Pete Rose in 1989 is a fault line, and that's just another reason, you know, why I wanted to write Charlie Hustle.
There you go. And I agree with you. You know, you look at how, and maybe Pete Rose's example and how it hurt baseball with such a harsh ban, it contributed to, you know, Michael Jordan, what was it? He had to go 2 years and play baseball or something. Who am I thinking of that was in basketball that had to go? Was it same? I don't remember who.
Michael Jordan went and played baseball, and there's lots of rumors and conspiracy theories about why, but nothing proven on that.
Yeah, it seemed like it was kind of a penalty for being caught for gambling. And then I think there was a couple other people that had to do that, either in basketball or, I don't know, maybe football, or was it football? I don't know. But it seemed like, you know, other people got off. I mean, certainly Michael Jordan, you know, got off on gambling. And the doping era, I think, was the most, to me, that was worse than the gambling thing that Pete Rose did, because those guys were totally faking it, you know. The Lance Armstrongs, you know, and all those guys with an asterisk that I guess maybe they'll end up in the Hall of Fame if they're not there already in baseball, you know. Once you found out that they were juicing, I mean, you're just like, and cheating, you're just like, how is that worse than Pete Rose?
You know, I think, you know, it's hard to compare the two. Both are obviously wrong. Mm-hmm. If you had 15 or 20, or let's just say 50% of the league, you know, placing bets on games, that's also incredibly corrosive. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you. You know, I think, you know, it's clear that despite what Pete Rose did was wrong and incredibly wrong for all the reasons we've discussed, you know, the steroid era did far more damage to the game of baseball, in my opinion, than the Pete Rose gambling scandal did.
And a lot of those guys are still revered too and celebrated. And you're just kind of like, this isn't too fair. So anything more you want to tease out in the book before we go? Anything we wanted to cover that you wanted to tease out to get people to pick it up?
No, I appreciate the time, Chris. The book comes out on Tuesday, March 26th. It's available for pre-order right now, wherever you can buy books. And I'm just so grateful for the conversation. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Has anyone ever done a survey of what most Americans feel that he should be allowed in the Hall of Fame at the very least? He's paid his due.
There have been many surveys done over the years. And, you know, as time has gone on, you know, the surveys and the answers have changed. You know, the bottom line is the opinion is split. I mean, Pete is almost like a political party now. When you're with him, you're with him. And if you're against him, you're against him. Yeah. And that has borne out to be true over all these many decades. But, you know, I will say, like, you know, whether you love Pete Rose or you hate Pete Rose, whether you think he should be in the Hall of Fame, whether you think he's earned every bit of his life in the hinterlands of his sport and should remain there, you know, I think this is an important book that captures who he is and what happened during this window of time when baseball still did mean so much here in America.
It did. And I think it hurt the game. It drove me from the game. I know that personally, and that and a few other things. But I remember about 10 years ago, I was in Vegas and I was up in the northwest part where it's like the end of the earth of when the city meets the desert going up to the alien highway. And there was a little baseball shop that had just opened up, or card shop or comic shop. I don't know what it was, but they had Pete Rose there to sign autographs, and they had a big banner they put up, and he was signing autographs for either $35 or $50. And I remember seeing it disappointed, going, Jesus, I mean, Pete Rose, $50 for an autograph. I mean, that just seems like a crime. But it probably, and you know, he's out in the middle of nowhere too. And I'm like, geez, wow. This, I mean, he's definitely paid a price. I mean, I think anybody could look at it and say he's paid a price. Come on, let's accept people that have addiction problems. I mean, at least he earned all of his stuff that he did. You know, he wasn't juicing stuff. So thank you for coming on the show. We really appreciate it, Keith.
Thank you, Chris, for having me. It was my pleasure.
There you go. Give us your .coms so you want people to find you on the interwebs.
Yeah. Again, my website is keithob.com. I'm on Twitter at the same handle, keithob, and you can follow me on Instagram at O'BrienStory.
There you go. Thanks for coming on. Thanks to Moronis for tuning in. Order the book wherever fine books are sold. You can pre-order it now for March 26, 2024. Charlie Hustle, The Rise and Fall of Pete Rose, and The Last Glory Days of Baseball. And let's get him back in the Hall of Fame, please, people. I mean, let's just fix it. There you go. Thanks so much for tuning in. Be sure to go to goodreads.com/ChrisFoss, linkedin.com/ChrisFoss, and ChrisFoss1, the TikTokity. Thanks for tuning in. Be good to each other. Stay safe, and we'll see you guys next time. And that should have a sound.